This episode is brought to you by Phantom Delivery. Raventail Publishing presents the debut novel from Mark Geyer, Phantom Delivery. When Harper Sumner wakes up in the world of her favorite teen horror series, she thinks her dreams have come true, until the terror begins and she learns that the life of a protagonist can be a nightmare. Stalked by a murderous pizza delivery man dubbed the Phantom Driver, Harper's ultimate wish fulfillment takes a terrifying turn when bodies begin piling up and the cosmic truth of her impossible situation begins to reveal itself. The only way out is to push herself to her breaking point and confront the dark side of nostalgia. New York Times best-selling author Jonathan Mayberry says Phantom Delivery is a mind-bending story of shifting realities that demands an answer to the question, "Who am I?" Weird, dark, and highly entertaining. Phantom Delivery by Mark Geyer, available now on Amazon and Kindle Unlimited. Okay. Welcome back to another episode of Shadows and Ink, and today's guest is Stanley Weatter, and I'm going to let him introduce himself and tell us all about who he is and what he does. So take it away, Stanley.
Okay, well, thanks for having me on, Anita. I'm a three-time Bram Stoker Award-winning author. Been writing about the horror genre for the last 40 years. Published 21 books, published over 700 articles, interviews, and essays, and short stories, and had a television show called Dark Dreamers that was syndicated in Canada in the years 2000 to 2001. And you can view some of the episodes of that show on YouTube, or you can buy the DVD at Amazon and other outlets.
Yeah, I did. I checked out the YouTube channel when I was preparing for the interview. I saw several of the episodes. They look very interesting. So, as you said, you've worked as a journalist, and you've interviewed some interesting people over the years. How did you get started in journalism and interviewing, and what were some of your highlights?
I started way back in the 70s as a newspaper journalist. I was in what they call an arts and entertainment reporter, and I'd always had a love for the genre. And at the same time, back in the 70s and 80s, Stephen King came on the scene. So the mainstream press was interested in how this lowly genre called horror was becoming number one bestsellers on the New York Times bestseller list. So there was also something called the World Fantasy Convention and the World Horror Convention, which were starting out in the late 70s, early 80s. So as a reporter, I was sent down with the assignment to interview folks like Stephen King and Peter Straub and Robert Block at these various conventions that were held in different cities around the country. And that's where I got my start.
So it must have been interesting to start out, because I mean that's basically the 70s is when horror sort of took off in the mainstream public eye. So it must have been interesting to see the start of it, as it were. So do you have any interesting stories from that in the 70s and early 80s?
How many hours do you have?
Oh, we only have 30 minutes, but yeah, a few highlights would be nice.
Well, meeting Stephen King and Peter Straub at the same time at a World Horror Convention when it was held in, I believe it was Providence, Rhode Island. And, you know, Peter Straub looked like a lawyer and Stephen King was dressed like a truck driver. And they were both sitting in the bar and I introduced myself, showed them my press card. And said, I'm being paid to interview you guys, spill your guts. So that was the first of several interviews that I had done at annual World Horror and World Fantasy conventions with Peter and with Stephen. And they were the most down-to-earth folks you can imagine. And As I say, if Stephen King wasn't the Stephen King, you would just mistake him for someone who drives an 18-wheeler across country, and you would have mistaken Peter Straub for someone who's a high power prosecutor in the legal field.
Yeah, that must be an interesting juxtaposition, though, seeing those two together. A guy looks like a lawyer, a guy looks like a truck driver.
And they sounded pretty much alike. I mean, Peter was very articulate, not to say that Stephen wasn't, but you again, unless you knew that it was the Stephen King, to use that phrase, because a waitress did say that when Stephen was paying the bar tab for us, and he signed off on his room number and signed his name, of course, and the waitress looked at it and said, "Stephen King, huh? Wait a minute, are you the Stephen King?" And he kind of sheepishly said, "Yeah, I guess I am."
Ah, oh, that was fun. So, tell us a little bit about Dark Dreamers. How did you get into that show, hosting it and interviewing? And what are some of your favorite interviews from your time doing the show?
That was again around the year of 2000, 2001. I was approached by a Canadian production company, and they were looking for someone to help put together a series of interviews, because they were going to do a 1 hour or 90-minute feature documentary on the genre. And I counter proposed. They say, "Well, why don't we do a weekly TV series, and I will go wherever I need to go and visit the homes and offices of the top people in the who are filmmakers, artists, writers, actors in the horror genre." And they bought that idea. So for 2 years, I traveled across country in Canada and in the United States, and interviewed folks like Clive Barker in their homes, and Wes Craven in his office, and John Carpenter in his office, and Harlan Ellison in his home. And eventually did 2 seasons worth of shows, and did about 35 interviews, and for what ultimately, just as with this podcast, became a half hour syndicated television series.
Yeah, and you mentioned Harlan Ellison, and I have to know, because I'm a fan of Harlan Ellison. What was that interview like? Because
That
he's
was a
got a bit of
lot
a
of fun.
reputation.
Oh, and it's well deserved. I mean, there was only one Harlan Ellison, because you knew that because he registered his name as a trademark. If you're not many people aware of that, but I've never seen any other author said, "I'm going to trademark my name to make sure that there's no other person who could be mistaken as Harlan Ellison." So anyway, I went to his home with my television crew, which is about a 5-person crew, to set up what had to be a day-long event, because if you're not in the television or film industry, you don't realize that when you're seeing a show that has a 10-minute or 15-minute or 30-minute interview with somebody, that's actually edited down from what could be a 2, 3, 4 hour interview session. So that was the case with Harlan. And when we showed up at his front door, his wife Susan was leaving, and she had a blanket or whatever they're called, mat, with her under her arm. And Harlan said, "Well, you're going to be just with me for the day, Stanley. And if he liked you, he called you by your last name. So he said, 'Well, we honor you're going to be with me for the day. And can you handle it?' He says, 'She's off to do Pilates.' And he says, and this is back in the year 2000. And he says, 'Well, you know what Pilates are, don't you?' And I said, 'Well, of course, Harlan. I had two for breakfast.'" And his jaw dropped, and believe it or not, he was speechless. And I said, "See, Harlan, you're not getting, I'm not getting you for the day. You're getting me for the day." And again, his jaw fell to the floor. So he's one of the few people that I know. A lot of people have had stories about how frightening he was and intimidating he could be, but I had known him from previous interviews and various conventions, so it's like, Harlan, you're no big deal. And by the way, you should be honored that I'm interviewing you. And he said, well, you should be honored that I'm only going to charge you $1,000 for my time. And of course, as you know, people in the business, journalists don't pay for interviews. You go to someone, you say, well, this is going to give you exposure. This is going to increase your celebrity or notoriety or whatever the case may be. For Harlan, it was like, well, you're going to pay me for my time. I'm giving up a day of my time to talk to you guys. I need exposure like a man freezing out in Siberia needs exposure. So I want my thousand before I let you talk to me. And of course, we had already set the day aside. The crew was there. Everybody's on the payroll. Everyone's on the clock. And I said, well, let me get my wallet out and I'll pay you that thousand. He says, no, we otter. I don't want you to pay the thousand. And he turns to the producer standing next to me and he says, I want his thousand. I want his credit card. So what happened was the producer very quickly agreed to overnight ship him a check, a banker's check for $1,000, and that calmed the waters. And we went inside and spent the day interviewing Harlan for the show.
Yeah, that sounds about right, I think. I bet that was a fun interview too. So, how do you think you've evolved as a journalist in an interview over the years? Are there any interviews you would have liked to have done differently looking back, or anything that intimidated you over the years?
No one ever intimidated me. The only person that I was in awe of was Ray Bradbury. He was my first Dark Dreamer interview, which was held in his home August 7th, 1974, when I was on a scholarship studying at Warner Brothers Studio in Los Angeles. And I was simply in awe of Bradbury. He was the person who inspired me to become a writer. And so basically, I just turned on the tape recorder, put my jewel cup around my neck, and said, "Please, Bradbury, please, Mr. Bradbury, spill your guts. Tell me, just talk, and I'll sit here and listen." I had no prepared questions. I had no idea what I was doing. And eventually, his wife threw me out of the house because she said, "Ray, it's time to go to bed. It's past your bedtime." And I don't care who that reporter is. He's just, I was just a kid, just still in college. And Ray loved to talk. I loved to listen. And that was the first of many, many interviews. But having that opportunity to meet Ray Bradbury and interview my idol, I sat there and to myself and said, there could be a career of just specializing in dealing with these kind of personalities. They were
Yeah.
my idol.
Yeah, Ray Bradbury was one of my inspirations too, so I can imagine. So you've also worked as an editor on a few books, collections of short stories, essays, other things. So, how did you get into editing and what was that like?
I edited two anthologies. One was called Night Vision 7, and the other one was called After the Darkness. And my inspiration for editing them was the idea that all writers hate the question, "Where do you get your ideas?" And I told the participant in those two collections, "By the way, when you're done writing your story, you're going to write a little paragraph or two of telling me where you got the idea for that story, and I'm going to interview you and call it an afterwards," and that's after slash or hyphen words. So after your words, we're going to put my questions to you as afterwards, and we're going to find out where you got the idea for the story and how you came about to write it. So I like to think that my two anthologies were unique in the sense of that when you read the story by Richard Layman or Gayon Wilson or My mind goes blank on who else was in them. Chet Williams and Gary Bradner. You actually found out where they got the idea for the story, and how long it took them to write it, and how many drafts it might have taken them to compose it, and that's how that came about. It was simply for my own enjoyment to approach them from that angle.
Yeah, that's a cool idea. And I can speak for experience. Writers do like be do hate being asked where we get our ideas from. Okay, so another one of your projects is Dark Dreamers Facing the Masters of Fear, which is a photography collection. So how did that project become reality?
That was from meeting up with my dear friend Beth Gwynn, who's a world-renowned personality photographer, and she's based in Nashville. She got her start photographing famous people in the country music industry, and she always had a passion for horror. And when you were going to these world fantasy conventions and world horror conventions and the Necon convention in Rhode Island, you would have at those days Robert Bloch and Ray Bradbury and Stephen King and Peter Straub, and it was a who's who. This is back in the 1980s. So she would photograph them, and we came up with the idea of, well, gee, that this would be great for a book of photographs of just dark dreamers, people who do this for a living. Christopher Lee was in it. Wes Craven was in it, Stuart Gordon was in it. So we had actors, filmmakers, artists like Bob Eagleton, H.R. Giger is in the book. So we put that together for Cemetery Dance, and that came out as a limited edition back in 2001. And I'm happy to report that Crossroad Press is now going to issue it as an ebook sometime this coming spring. So it's going to be basically the practically what we're calling the 25th anniversary edition of Dark Dreamers.
Oh, that's cool. So, yeah, and another one of your projects, you've got a lot of projects, is the book Comic Book Rebels. Now, how did you get involved in that? And are you a fan of comic books?
Always have been, yeah. I always loved the comic books as a young person, and a friend of mine was who is luckily still with us to this day, Steven Bissett, who's a world-renowned comic book artist, and we were discussing one day how the underground artists and independent producers of comic books, excuse me, hadn't really gotten the exposure, serious exposure, we thought they would get. I mean, you had some books of interviews with the Jack Kirbys and the Stan Lees, but that was mainstream. That was the Marvel Comics and DC Comics. And we were interested in the Rebels, the underground artists and writers, people who basically put out their own comic. And one of the best examples I can say is the Peter Laird and Kevin Eastman, the co-creators of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And they started out producing their own comic book, and which became, as everyone knows now, a worldwide phenomenon. And when people think, well, how successful was it? I tell people, do you know that it's a $5 billion industry related to just to the Ninja Turtles? It's the most successful comic book title in history. But it's everywhere. I mean, the movies, the TV shows, and this is something that's 40 years old, the Ninja Turtles, but they had never had anybody seriously interview them. And I think, a good example of what Steve Bissett and I were trying to do with Comic Book Rebels is spotlight those creators.
Yeah, because yeah, they don't get as much attention as the mainstream comics like Marvel and DC, definitely. So you've also written some short stories, and they became an audio collection as well. Intimate Strangers, Tales of Dark Suspense. So how was that experience writing fiction as opposed to writing interviews?
It's frustrating. I could do an interview in a day, in terms of doing the interview, in terms of magazines interviews, interview the person for an hour and then spend a couple hours editing it, and then in a month or two see it published in Fangoria or Twilight Zone magazine or whatever. But whereas with a short story, it would take me weeks to work on a story, and there's always been very few markets for professional fiction. And the best thing about writing short stories for me was back in 1980, there was a short story competition in the Boston Phoenix newspaper, and it was to be judged by some obscure writer named Stephen King. And I said, yeah, I think this might be worth my time. I'll try and write a story and submit it to the competition and see what happens. Well, there was over 450 people entered the competition, and they gave the best or worst or scariest or whatever to King to judge, and he was crazy enough to choose my story, The Toucher, and that story is in the collection Intimate Strangers.
Yeah, well, congratulations on winning the contest, and you pretty much summed up the entire writing experience by saying it was frustrating.
Very frustrating. I mean, I know writers who can do, well, look at Joe Lansdale, who's in several of my interview collections. Joe Lansdale can write a short story a day and do 30 stories in a month, and they're all great. I would do a short story, and it would take me a month to write one and have it acceptable to me and to a publisher.
Yeah, every writer has its own have their own process though, and some people can write just like that, and some people it takes months. So no, it's the way it is. So what do you in your opinion, what is it about the horror dark fiction genre that holds such an appeal for fans?
It's the thrill. Everybody loves to be scared. It's a human condition. That's why there's things called amusement parks. Because why do you call it amusement parks? You don't go to be amused at an amusement park. You go to amusement park to be terrified. You go to amusement park to be scared, to have your adrenaline rush. And it's the same with horror movies and horror fiction. You read them and go to watch them to get that thrill, to get that adrenaline rush, knowing that when all is said and done, the movie ends, you leave the theater, and when the short story or novel is done, you close the book and you go back into the sunshine and have a pina colada or a beer or whatever and call it a day.
Definitely. So, what do you think of today's horror authors and the evolution of horror fiction from, say, the 70s and early 80s?
I'll be honest with you, I don't read very much of contemporary writers simply because I consider myself more or less retired from the field, at least in terms of writing books and hustling interviews left and right. So what I'm doing for the last few years is going back and reading my favorite writers from my childhood, and that would be people like Bradbury and Richard Matheson and Clark Ashton Smith, H.P. Lovecraft, Edgar Rice Burroughs. So I'm basically going back and all those books that inspired me to become a writer when I was a kid, I'm going back now and with hopefully mature eyes, reading them and rereading them and enjoying them. So that's my polite way of avoiding my ignorance of the contemporary field.
So what do you like to do to relax besides reading? Do you have any hobbies or hidden talents?
No, I don't. My hidden talent is that I'm somehow able to get people to spill their guts, as I like to phrase it, and let them do all the heavy lifting for the interview. I did a book called The Brian Lumley Companion. It has the longest interview that Brian Lumley ever did in his career. And I would sit there and I would ask the questions. So I'd ask a one sentence question, and then he would spend 2,000 words composing the answer to it. And then I would ask a two sentence question, and then he'd spend another 10,000 words answering that question. And I go, this is the way to write a book. This is the way to get things done. Let the other person do all the heavy lifting, and I get to have the glory of having my name on that book.
Okay, so besides horror, do you have any other favorite books you like to read?
Biographies, I guess celebrity biographies. Can't think of one that I've read recently, but I just like to read about people who are in the entertainment industry. Nothing profound, just again to just get to relax.
Yeah, I like a good celebrity biography myself. I actually did read a good one recently. It was Baggage by Alan Cumming. I
Okay.
found that was very entertaining. A little raunchy, but very entertaining. Okay, so you interviewed a lot of people over the years. You read a lot of books. So do you have a favorite author?
Well, as I've stated, it's still probably Ray Bradbury. Ray Bradbury inspired me to become a writer. After Ray, I'd probably say Richard Matheson, because Matheson was also a major inspiration, and I was blessed to be able to work with him on several projects, including the Richard Matheson Companion and his collected stories. And also his Twilight Zone script. So I was involved with Richard on three different major book projects in his career. Plus, of course, he was featured in an episode of my TV series, Dark Dreamers.
Okay, thank you. So I think we'll wrap the interview up here, and I'd like to thank you for being a guest. It was a pleasure chatting with you. You've had a very interesting career.
I consider myself very lucky, a very, very big fish in a very small pond, but lucky.
Yeah. Okay, so that's it for this episode of Shadows and Ink, and we will be back again some other time. Bye for now. This episode is brought to you by Phantom Delivery. Raventail Publishing presents the debut novel from Mark Geyer, Phantom Delivery. When Harper Sumner wakes up in the world of her favorite teen horror series, she thinks her dreams have come true, until the terror begins and she learns that the life of a protagonist can be a nightmare. Stalked by a murderous pizza delivery man dubbed the Phantom Driver, Harper's ultimate wish fulfillment takes a terrifying turn when bodies begin piling up and the cosmic truth of her impossible situation begins to reveal itself. The only way out is to push herself to her breaking point and confront the dark side of nostalgia. New York Times best-selling author Jonathan Mayberry says Phantom Delivery is a mind-bending story of shifting realities that demands an answer to the question, "Who am I?" Weird, dark, and highly entertaining. Phantom Delivery by Mark Geyer, available now on Amazon and Kindle Unlimited.